Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English. On today's program, you will hear reports from Brian Lynn and Dan Novak. Jill Robbins answers an English question from a learner in China. We close with an American story. This week, it is part one of Paul's case. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
Olympians and others arriving in China for the Beijing Games were welcomed with blue skies and clear views of the city. The clean air marks a big change from just 10 years ago, when the city's pollution often made it difficult to see nearby buildings. At the current Winter Games, the air has been clean enough for people to see the mountains and surrounding city. So, how has China improved its air quality after years of serious pollution problems? In 2013, pollution hit record levels in Beijing. This led to increased international attention and criticism of how the country was dealing with the problem. China reacted by launching an aggressive plan to improve its air quality. Officials promised to fight pollution with an iron fist, said a recent report from the Energy Policy Institute at the University of Chicago. China's plans were announced around the same time the country started its campaign to get the 2022 Winter Games. The country ordered stronger emissions rules for coal-fired power centers and limited the number of cars on the road. The report notes that China had also aimed to clear its skies for the 2008 Summer Games in Beijing. But for the 2022 Games, similar measures were carried out on a much larger scale, it said. Local officials were given environmental targets, and coal-fired burners in homes were replaced with gas or electric heaters. The government's reporting of air quality data also improved. Even though there has been progress, Beijing's yearly average air pollution in 2021 was still more than six times the limit established by the World Health Organization's guidelines. Because Beijing is surrounded by coal-burning industries, it still experiences bad air days, said Lori Milavirta. She is with the Center for Research on Energy and Clean Air in Helsinki, Finland. Milavirta was living in Beijing until 2019. She said the severity of such bad days depends on things like how many cars are on the road or how much wind there is to blow away polluted air. Chinese officials have praised the country's progress. They say that last year there were 288 days of good air quality in Beijing, compared to 176 days in 2013. The effects of air pollution can be felt in different ways, such as irritated eyes and difficulty breathing. You could hear people coughing all over because of it, Milavirta said about the dirty air. children, older adults, and people with existing health issues, including the breathing condition asthma, are more likely to feel the effects of pollution. Particles found in air pollution can get deep into people's lungs. This has been linked to health problems, including uneven heartbeat and reduced lung performance. Poorer people are also more affected if they cannot buy air purifiers or must work outdoors, said Guojuan He. He is a researcher at the University of Hong Kong and co-writer of the report from the Energy Policy Institute. China says it will become carbon neutral by 2060. Although China still depends heavily on coal for electricity, He said the country has made major progress in limiting emissions. China is also quickly developing clean energy from sources like wind and sun. When it's possible, I think in general, the transition is going to be happening, and it's actually happening right now, He said. In the meantime, he noted that the government can take short-term measures, such as temporarily shutting down factories. That could help ensure clearer skies for big political or social events, like the Olympics. I'm Brian Lin.
This Sunday, 31.5 million Americans plan to bet on the American Football Championship game, the Super Bowl, a trade group says. The gambling industry's national trade group, the American Gaming Association, or AGA, released a report Tuesday. It estimated that over $7.6 billion will be bet on the Super Bowl. In addition, the number of people playing a game of chance tied to the event increased by 35% from last year. Those gamblers are expected to bet 78% more money than in 2021. Both of those numbers would be the highest ever. Gamblers include people making bets with friends or coworkers. They also include bets with legal and illegal sports books. Sportsbooks are places where people can place bets on sporting events. Business advice company Morning Consult said that Americans bet $52.7 billion on professional sports in 2021. That was twice the amount from 2020. Americans have never been more interested in legal sports wagering, said Bill Miller in a statement. He is the AGA's president. He said the growth of legal gambling across the country protects fans, but also puts illegal operators on notice that their time is limited. This year's Super Bowl is between the Los Angeles Rams and the Cincinnati Bengals. It is being played in the Rams' home stadium in Los Angeles. The Bengals are led by star quarterback Joe Burrow, and the Rams are led by quarterback Matthew Stafford. The Rams are favored to win. Since last year's game, 45 million more people will be able to bet on the Super Bowl. Over the past year, 10 additional states have legalized sports betting. There are now 30 states in the U.S. and Washington, D.C., which permit legal gambling. Most states have laws barring some kinds of gambling, and a few states still ban all gambling. The AGA predicted that 18.2 million American adults will place traditional sports bets online or at legal or illegal sports books. Another 18.5 million Americans plan to bet with people they know. That number is up 23%. The AGA found that 55% of sports gamblers plan to bet on the Rams, and 45% plan to back the Bengals. However, the Associated Press reports that legal sportsbooks say more bets and money are being placed on Cincinnati so far. Moneyline betting is a bet placed on one team to win, which does not depend on the score. So far, 76% of bets predict that Cincinnati will win the game. The Super Bowl is also one of the most dangerous times of year for people with gambling problems. Recovering gambling addict Harry Levant is an official with the group Stop Predatory Gambling. He said the advertising around sports betting is like the tobacco industry's efforts to get people to smoke. The industry spends a reported $1.2 billion a year on marketing. He said legal sports betting is increasing a public health crisis in America involving gambling. One out of two people struggling with a gambling problem contemplates suicide, and one out of five will attempt suicide, he said. I am one of those one out of five. Levant said the quick rise of in-game betting feeds into a gambler's desire for more and faster ways to bet. No longer is gambling limited to who's going to win the game, he said. Now gambling is on every play. Keep them gambling, keep chasing action. Morning Consult found this year that 18% of American adults bet on sports at least once a month. I'm Dan Novak.
This week on Ask a Teacher, we answer a question about the adverb outside from Philip in China. He writes, Hi, could you please tell me the difference between outside of and outside? Please tell me which is better. We should think outside the box. Or we should think outside of the box. Dear Philip, thank you for writing to us. Outside can have one of four uses in English, as a noun, adjective, adverb, or preposition. It is not surprising that you found it hard to understand. Your question brings up an interesting dispute between grammar experts in the United States and Britain. The Oxford English Dictionary says that outside, in phrases like outside of the box, is an adverb. It changes the meaning of the verb, in this case, think. Together with the preposition of, it becomes a two-word preposition. Here are other examples of such two-word prepositions.
A baby bird flew out of the nest. He was never close to his sister.
Your example uses outside of or outside to talk about the space the subject occupies. You can use either outside alone or with of in that sense. There is another use where outside of means apart from or besides. Here are examples of that use.
Outside of their later songs, I do not enjoy the Beatles' music. I cannot think of a time outside of high school when I wore a tie.
The Merriam-Webster Learner's Dictionary says outside of is a North American use. Another British dictionary, the Online Oxford Dictionaries, also sees the use of outside of to talk about location as chiefly North American. But its use in the apart from sense is seen as normal for British and American English. So in British English, you would usually hear,
think outside the box.
And in American English, you might hear it that way, or
think outside of the box.
What question do you have about American English? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Jill Robbins.
Now, the VOA Special English Program, American Stories. Our story today is called Paul's Case. It was written by Willa Cather. Paul's Case will be told in two parts. Here is Kay Gallant with part one of the story.
Paul hated school. He did not do his homework. He did not like his teachers. Paul's father did not know what to do with him. His teachers did not know either. One afternoon, all his teachers at Pittsburgh High School met together with him to discuss his case. Paul was late. When he entered the room, his teachers sat waiting for him. He was tall for his age and very thin. His clothes were too small for him, but they were clean. He had a bright red flower in the buttonhole of his black jacket. One of the teachers asked Paul why he had come to the meeting. Paul said politely that he wanted to do better in school. This was a lie. Paul often lied. His teachers began to speak. They had many complaints. One said Paul talked to the other students instead of paying attention to the lessons. Another said Paul always sat in class with his hands covering his eyes. A third teacher said Paul looked out the window instead of looking at her. His teachers attacked him without mercy. Paul's eyebrows moved up and down as his teacher spoke. His smile never left his face, but his fingers shook as he touched the flower on his coat. At last, the meeting was over. Paul's smile got even wider. He bowed gracefully and left the room. His teachers were angry and confused. The art teacher spoke for all of them when he said there was something about Paul that he didn't understand. I don't think he really means to be bad, he said. There's just something wrong with that boy. Then the art teacher remembered one warm afternoon when Paul had fallen asleep in his class. Paul's face was white with thin blue veins under the skin. The boy's face looked tired and lined, like an old man's. His eyebrows moved up and down, even in his sleep. After he left the meeting, Paul ran down the hill from the school, whistling. He was late for his job at the concert hall. Paul was an usher there. He showed people to their seats. He carried messages for them. He brought them their programs with a polite bow. Everyone thought he was a charming boy and the best usher at the hall. When Paul reached the concert hall that evening, he went immediately to the dressing room. About 6 boys were already there. Paul began changing his clothes with excited hands. He loved his green uniform with the gold pockets and design. Paul rushed into the concert hall as soon as he had changed clothes. He ran up and down the hall, helping people. He became more and more excited. His face became pink, and his eyes seemed larger and very bright. He looked almost handsome. At last, everyone was seated. The orchestra began to play, and Paul sat down with a sigh of relief. The music seemed to free something in Paul's spirit. Then a woman came out and began to sing. She had a rich, strong soprano voice. Paul felt truly happy for the first time that day. At the end of the concert, Paul went back to the dressing room. After he had changed his clothes again, he went outside the concert hall. He decided to wait for the singer to come out. While he waited, he looked across the street to the large hotel called the Schenley. All the important people stayed at the Schenley when they visited Pittsburgh. Paul had never been inside it, but he used to stand near the hotel's wide glass doors. He liked to watch the people enter and leave. He believed if he could only enter this kind of a hotel, he would be able to leave school, his teachers, and his ordinary gray life behind him forever. At last, the singer came out of the concert hall. Paul followed her as she walked to the hotel. He was part of a large crowd of admirers who had waited to see her. When they all reached the hotel, she turned and waved. Then the doors opened and she disappeared inside. Paul stared into the hotel as the doors slowly closed. He could feel the warm, sweet air inside, and for a moment he felt part of a golden world of sparkling lights and marble floors. He thought about the mysterious dishes of food being served in the hotel's dining room. He thought about green bottles of wine growing cold in silver buckets of ice. He turned away from the hotel and walked home. He thought of his room with its horrible yellow wallpaper, the old bed with its ugly red cover. He shook his head. Soon he was walking down the street where he lived. All the houses on Cordelia Street were exactly alike. Middle-class businessmen had bought them for their families. All their children went to school and to church. They loved arithmetic. As Paul walked toward his house, he felt as if he were drowning in ugliness. He longed for cool colors and soft lights and fresh flowers. He didn't want to see his ugly bedroom or the cold bathroom with its cracked mirror and gray floor. Paul went around to the back of his father's house. He found an open window and climbed into the kitchen. Then he went downstairs to the basement. He was afraid of rats, but he did not want to face his own bedroom. Paul couldn't sleep. He sat on the floor and stared into the darkness until morning came. The following Sunday, Paul had to go to church with his family. Afterwards, everyone came home and ate a big dinner. Then all the people who lived on Cordelia Street came outside to visit each other. After supper, Paul asked his father if he could visit a friend to get some help with his arithmetic. Paul left the house with his school books under his arm, but he didn't go to his friend's house. Instead, he went to see Charlie Edwards. Charlie was a young actor. Paul liked to spend as much time as he could at the theater, where Charlie Edwards and his group acted in their plays. It was only at the theater and the concert hall that Paul felt really alive. The moment he smelled the air of these places, he felt like a prisoner suddenly set free. As soon as he heard the concert hall orchestra play, he forgot all the ugly, unpleasant events in his own life. Paul had discovered that any kind of music awakened his imagination. Paul didn't want to become a musician, however. He didn't want to become an actor, either. He only wanted to be near people who were actors and musicians. He wanted to see the kind of life these artists led. Paul found the schoolroom even worse after a night at the theater or the concert hall. He hated the school's bare floors and cracked walls. He turned away from his dull teachers in their plain clothes. He tried to show them how little he thought of them and the studies they taught. He would bring photographs of all the actors he knew to school. He would tell the other students that he spent his evenings with these people at elegant restaurants. Then he would announce that he was going away to Europe or to California or to Egypt for a while. The next day, he would come to school smiling nervously. His sister was ill, he would say, but he was still planning to make his trip next spring. Paul's problems at school became worse. Even after the meeting with his teachers, things did not get better. He told them he had no time to study grammar and arithmetic. He told them he had to help the actors in the theater. They were old friends of his. Finally, his teachers went to Paul's father. He took Paul out of school and made him get a job. He told the manager at the concert hall that Paul could not work there anymore. His father warned the doorman at the theater not to let Paul into the place. And Charlie Edwards promised Paul's father not to see Paul again. All the actors at the theater laughed when they heard about the stories Paul had been telling. The women thought it was funny that Paul had told people he took them out to nice restaurants and sent them flowers. They agreed with the teachers and with his father that Paul's was a bad case.
You have just heard part one of the American story, Paul's Case. It was written by Willa Cather. Your storyteller was Kay Gallant.
That's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.